The Blast from Our Past Network.
You don't recognize that. Wow. He had this idea. It was kind of a virologist's idea. He believed that you could cure racism and hate, literally cure it, by injecting music and love into people's lives. When he was scheduled to perform at a peace rally, gunmen came to his house and shot him down. 2 days later, he walked out on that stage and sang. Somebody asked him why. He said, the people who are trying to make this world worse are not taking a day off. How can I? Light up the darkness.
Talking Back.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Talking Back. This is the podcast where we like to chat about past achievements in movies, comics, video games, and more. This week, we're going to be discussing a little something called I Am Legend. And what goes down in this movie is years after a plague kills most of humanity and transforms the rest into monsters, the sole survivor in New York City struggles valiantly to find a cure. Dean, welcome.
Hey, Tim. Super pumped about this one.
Very excited for this one.
Yes.
Huge. Go ahead.
This is one of those movies that I think I own. And then I go to grab it and I'm like, ah, this is one of those movies that I used to own.
Oh.
And when I split my collection in half, I lost. I lost the I Am Legend bid. So it sucks. But then I'm really excited to watch them because it means I probably haven't watched them in like 10 years. So that was this movie. Hadn't watched it in like 10 years. One I used to own. And oh, man, so great. I just loved getting back into watching it again.
Yeah, this was one of those movies. I don't think I've mentioned a movie like this in a while, but this was one of the movies that I binged it. Like when I got my hands on it, I just watched it. Like I'd watched it weekly for several
nice.
Weeks, maybe,
yeah.
You know, a couple months. I just always had this one in. I really, really loved it. So this is one I've been wanting to cover for a really long time. And that time has finally arrived. I'm not sure why it took this long, but
yeah,
here it is.
Very long.
Here it's. I guess it's topical with all all the monsters that have been recently terrorizing the world and the virus wiped out 90% of humanity. That all just happened recently, right?
Yeah, Tim. What if by the time this comes out, it has happened?
Well, that's what I'm hoping for, but also right. I'm hoping that doesn't happen.
Fingers crossed.
But yeah, we're recording a little bit early.
Fingers crossed this just lines up with what's going on in the world so that it's very topical.
Yeah, we try to be topical from time to time. Maybe this is the week where it lands. Who knows?
Nice. Yeah. Bad. That would be a bad prediction.
So my favorite thing about this movie and what really captivated me the first time watching, because this is one of those movies where I put it in. I'm like, okay, I Am Legend. I know nothing about it. Let's see what this is all about. And boom, I'm so captivated from start to finish that it just becomes like an all-time classic. And what it is about it, the movie, it's the atmosphere. It's the mood. It's how this movie makes me feel. They capture the feeling of isolation and loneliness so well. It's like it's oozing through the screen.
Yeah.
They capture it with these incredible shots and scenes of a completely empty New York City. which cannot be easy to do. Whenever I see something like this, like we talked about this in our 28 Days Later episode on Patreon, there's shots of London in that movie that are just empty. There's shots of New York in this movie. It's empty.
Yeah.
However you want to say it, like they, you know, they probably closed down a couple streets in a couple scenes. A lot of it was probably CG, but like it's just a great feat to make that city look empty. So
totally.
All of that really helps to make me feel immersed in this movie. And, you know, Will Smith, he's doing things like pretending that a video store has people in it by setting up mannequins and having conversations with them. So that kind of like piques my interest about if that was me, I'd probably do the same thing. You know, you're like, you're aching for some sort of conversation with people. So you might do something like that. You know, he's going into abandoned buildings, searching for supplies and anything that he can use. He's like consistently sending out radio messages, hoping that anybody will respond to him, anybody at all. And, you know, we sort of also get to see him doing like this monotonous daily routine that he goes through. It, you know, it's not very exciting, but it's what he does. And all of that type of stuff is just really, really good world building to make me, the viewer, feel the way that the main character feels. And I got that from the very beginning of this movie, and it worked its way like all the way through it. It's a really interesting, like almost like a study on the human psyche of if this was you, how would you handle it? I just thought they did a great job with all this.
Yeah, totally. Just to point out like the setting up the mannequins at the video store, that one really sticks out to me. I really, really like that because that seems very strange. It seems like he's kind of losing his mind there talking to the mannequins. But then there's, you know, he's still doing work that he needs to do. So he's still focused on things. You know, he's not just like completely losing his mind. And then he talks to his dog a lot. And he like talks to his dog about specific, like the dog's talking back. Like, oh, you know, it's my birthday. If you threw me a party, you know, just tell me now. That's how I talk to my animal when I'm alone. I also talk to my cat like that. Like I have a conversation like if I'm alone, like that the cat knows what I'm talking about, just because to keep myself kind of like sane and in conversation, I've been so quiet all day if no one's been around that I just talk to the cat. And so when you put that alongside him setting up mannequins at a video store, it's like, oh yeah, I probably would get to this point if there was absolutely nobody to talk to. I wouldn't just be talking to my animal. Also, when I went out, I would set up mannequins so I could talk to them too. So it just, yeah, it seemed very strange at first. And then I got my mind to be like, I would do this exact thing for sure.
Yeah, I don't think it's like a journey into madness that's occurring. I think it's a journey into keeping his sanity by doing that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's what it doesn't appear like right away. You might think like, oh, he's lost it. He's talking to the mannequins. And then you're like, oh, no, that is not what's going on here.
Yeah. No. Yeah. So it's a movie from 2007. It had a really big budget, $150 million.
Okay.
Pretty massive.
Huge.
But it grosses $585 million. So that is a gigantic blockbuster. And then it went on to make another $125 million in DVD sales.
Wow. Wow. So, yeah, like
cha-ching.
It's a good time. Yeah, it's a good time to get Will Smith to lead your movie. Like at end of 90s, you know, into 2000s, in pushing into the late 2000s, he's just like a huge star, right? So all of his movies are grossing so much.
There's a couple Will Smith dramatic movies I haven't seen.
Yeah.
And with that being said, this is my favorite Will Smith movie.
Nice. Wow. Awesome.
Yeah. I just love what he's doing in this movie.
Yeah. That's a tough call for me. I'd have to think about that one.
Well, you have the next roughly 55 minutes to figure it out.
Okay. I'll just say it right now. Men in Black comes to mind. It just comes to mind.
Okay. Fair enough. This was loosely based on a 1954 novel by the same name and is actually the third movie adaptation of that novel.
Okay.
It was previously adapted in 1964 as The Last Man on Earth, then again in 1971 as The Omega Man.
Okay, right.
A couple of movies I haven't seen. I've had Omega Man recommended time and time again.
Yes. But who's in that? Is it Clint Eastwood? Or is it Charlton Heston? It's somebody like, it's some old white guy, I think.
Yes, it's a white guy. It's a white dude.
Right?
I don't know. Let's look it up.
Is it Steve McQueen? It's one of those guys.
It's definitely not Steve McQueen. I don't think it's Clint Eastwood.
I'm getting them all wrong. But yes, that's one I've definitely wanted to see. I didn't know it came from the same source material.
Yes, it is. Charlton Heston plays Robert Neville. So,
okay.
There you go. I wonder if he's anything like he was in Planet of the Apes.
I'm guessing very, very similar.
He'd be yelling at himself, though, about there not being anybody left. The whole world's dead.
Damn me. Damn me all to hell.
Yeah. I feel like we've worn that bit out a little bit. So I'm not going to go any further with it. Directed by Francis Lawrence, who would go on to direct the Hunger Game franchise.
Yes, I did know that. I love those movies.
Very good, very good. Music by James Newton Howard. Now, this is interesting because this gentleman is making a first appearance here on Talking Back. And I find it very weird because he has an absolutely massive film library.
He does. Okay? Yeah, he really does.
He did music for David Lynch's Dune. He did Major League, Pretty Woman, Marked for Death, My Girl, Falling Down, The Fugitive, Junior, Waterworld, Unbreakable, Signs, Batman Begins, and that trilogy, Blood Diamond, and that's just to name a few.
Yeah.
I feel like these are all movies that, like, we just have narrowly avoided doing. Right? Like, at any moment, we could have done any of those movies, and we somehow, like, swerved left when this movie was swerving right, and never covered anything that this dude has done.
Yeah, they're all near misses. They're all just right there.
I would cover any of those movies. Yeah. I like them all.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's weird. Great music in this movie, though. Very.
Oh, yeah, so good.
Very perfect for what's happening.
Yeah, I love James Newton Howard a lot. Sometimes I just fire up, like, James Newton Howard collection and just listen to that while I'm working.
Now, cinematography, Andrew Lesney. And he has a small movie trilogy to his name called The Lord of the Rings. I don't know if you've heard of it. And then followed it up with a lesser known trilogy, The Hobbit.
Yes, right. Very short run times on all those.
So
very small.
He knows how to handle a camera.
Yes.
Suffice to say.
He knows where to point it.
He knows where the record button is. He knows how to point it.
Good. He knows start. Knows to take the lens cap off.
Yeah, and then turn the lens so he zooms in a little bit. And then he knows how to press record.
Brilliant.
The intro of the movie here, you know, and I was alluding to it a little bit before, how it sort of just captivated me and drew me in. Now, for anybody who hasn't seen this movie, definitely check it out. I would say the effects don't hold up nowadays. They had some heavy CG, you know, back in 2007. I remember when I saw it, it looked incredible. It was like groundbreaking, cutting edge. Going back to it now, not so hot, not terrible. Could be a bit better. It's feeling a little bit dated, but I definitely recommend checking it out.
Yeah.
The way that this movie kind of captivates me here is they start off and there's a news program interviewing a scientist who says they've found a cure for cancer. Now, interestingly enough, they found it by like mutating the measles.
Right, yeah.
To get it to work. So
yeah,
that was a bit of an interesting twist. Just not saying we found a cure for cancer, but like the idea that they're playing with fire. They're playing with something that's already bad and trying to use it to like combat something else that's bad. I thought that was an interesting take on sort of it all going wrong.
Yeah, for sure. It's like, you know, it's kind of like when you get like shots for things, when you get vaccines, it's like they're putting a little bit, you know, of things in you so that you can build up antibodies for it. It's like that idea, but a little bit different, where they're like using a different virus to, and like telling it to fight what you have, you know, it's like using it against what you have. Interesting idea for sure. I love this opening. I love like the confidence in, Emma Thompson's playing the scientist. I love the confidence in this. Like, yeah, we were using the measles and now we can cure cancer.
Yeah.
I love it.
I don't remember the exact number, but they're like, how many people have you tested this on?
10,000 something.
10,039. And how many people are cancer free? 10,039. It's just like, it worked.
Great. Yeah. 100%.
Get your kazoo out. Party hats. Poppers. Party poppers.
Woo.
Now, love. I love how quickly this happens, because that's like a 30-second clip. And then we immediately fast forward 3 years later and New York is completely empty. So it's like, guess what? That didn't work.
I think something went wrong.
In the biggest of ways.
Yeah.
But that alone was enough to hook me. Just that like 1 minute of like interaction from these people. But, you know, it left me with this eerie feeling of what happened in these past 3 years that they're not showing us.
Yeah.
You know, it's up to our imagination to sort of fill in the gaps. And I liked that about the movie. Now, there are a few flashback scenes that we will get to, but you really don't get to know anything about this outbreak or what went wrong or anything to do with any of that. They just tell you, we found the cure. Oops, we were wrong.
Yeah.
5 billion people are dead. Sorry.
Yeah.
My bad. So cool. It's like a cool, cool vibe.
Yeah. They really just give you numbers. You don't have a lot of flashbacks seeing what happens. And it's interesting in a movie like this, you think you get all these flashbacks and you're going to end up filling in all the gaps, and you don't. You just have the bookends. You have what happened at the beginning. You get a couple flashbacks from right at the beginning. And then this is what's happening sort of at the end. And we just get to like, kind of like fill it in ourselves.
Yeah. So by not giving us any of that previous stuff, they open up a lot more time in the movie to focus on Will Smith's character, you know, the last man in New York here. We really get to dig into the human condition with him and how he's dealing with this isolation. So that's the route that they decided to go with. And that's kind of a route you don't often get with movies like this. Lots of movies like to focus on the other side. So this is kind of the vibe that was grabbing hold of me here. It was something a little bit different, a little bit unique.
Yeah. Yeah. And how I can tell that like the pace of this is really good is that like when we got to, you know, what felt like we were getting to the end, I thought we just started. Like, this thing flew. Like, it just goes by so quickly because it wraps you in right away and you're just like connected to this guy and figuring out his daily routine and everything. And I just, I just get so fixated on him and I just want to watch him do his thing.
Yeah. The pacing is incredible in this movie. It never stops.
And
it's not all action. There's a lot of drama, but the drama is so riveting. You're just on the edge of your seat. It's so well shot. Yeah. So we see Will Smith ripping around New York City in his Mustang GT500. It's cool because he knows all the streets. He knows where to go. There's no traffic. Everything's empty. He can do whatever he wants. He's got his dog Sam with him, and they're looking for animals to hunt. He finds some deer. He hunts them until a couple lions kill the deer, and that's kind of his kills gone. And I kind of an interesting scenario here where he could have probably shot the lions as well and had a bunch of meat, but it was almost like two predators sort of meeting in the field. And I think out of respect, Will kind of left them alone to have their kill because they got the kill before he did. And he just kind of backed off because he knows they need to eat too. And he just kind of left it alone. So, I thought that was an interesting moment for his character, just that he cared enough not to kill them.
Yeah. Also, they were like a family. I think that, you know, played into it too. You saw just the one lion kill the deer, but then like the other lions came out from behind to come and eat as well. And yeah, I think you just kind of see it in his eyes. He's like, yeah, you know what? You're also at the top of the food chain here. You got it. You got there first. You carry on. You keep on living.
Yeah. And I think he has respect for anything that's like alive and not infected because there's a lot of things around in the area that are not alive and are infected and are not as polite as a pack of lions.
Yeah.
But then an alarm goes off on his watch and he's triggered by it. When he's finally able to snap out of it, he like goes back home, locks down his house, which we see is heavily fortified.
Yeah.
Thought that was really neat. And then we see him hiding in a bathtub with Sam, his dog, and a machine gun. And we hear horrible sounds outside. And that's sort of the intro to the movie. It's like the first 10, 12 minutes. And it just leaves me so excited to keep going and to see more.
Yeah, for sure. Just exactly what you said. It's just... everything is new. You know, everything you're seeing is new. This like just opening up on like an overgrown city, like an overgrown New York that has like lions and deers just running through the streets, grass everywhere. It's never going to miss for me. Like open your movie like that. Always going to hit for me. I'm always going to be interested. And we're just like, yeah, we're right in it right away here.
That's an interesting thing that you bring up as well, because oftentimes when you watch like a post-apocalyptic movie like this, you're dealing with wastelands. But this was sort of the opposite of that. Like everyone's dead. There's nothing left, but they did a really good job of not making it look dark and gloomy and like run down. It was always sunny and beautiful. Like it felt warm. Sure. Like the vines and grass and stuff like that have, you know, they're growing over, but it sort of added to the beauty of the city. Like it almost looked more beautiful than normal. Which was sort of like the opposite of what you'd expect out of this type of scenario.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, I mentioned flashbacks before. So the only background we get to this outbreak and what's going on is given to us in three flashback scenes that are sprinkled throughout the movie. So I wanted to go through the flashbacks, you know, all together, just so we can kind of chat about that. In those scenes, it's like the early moments of the outbreak occurring and people starting to realize like shit is about to go down and this is not good. The government has ordered New York to be locked down and they're going to be blowing up the bridges leading into the city. And Will is trying to get his wife and daughter out. Will is going to stay behind because he had something to do with this virus, with this outbreak. He feels responsible to stop it, but they never tell us anything about his role. We don't know who he is. We don't know what he did or why he feels this urge to stay, but he's willing to send his family off and risk his life to be there to stop it, which is another, like, let us fill in the gaps ourselves. And don't spend time on that. It makes it more interesting not knowing anything than spending 10 minutes giving us the information.
It's used so like sparsely in this movie where they bring it up like that he feels this weight and he feels this responsibility. It's used very often, and every time that just makes it like really hit. You know, it's used here, it's going to be used later. We're just like, it's just kind of brought up, and it just, you can feel it. You can just feel that weight and pain from his character.
Yeah. So they drive to a check stop where people are not being allowed to let through. They're not being allowed to pass. Very chaotic scene. You can really feel the terror that all these people are feeling, wanting to get out, but they're not allowed out. Will has clearance and is able to get his wife and daughter through the checkpoint. He puts them on go ahead.
Sorry, can we just talk about the wife through the checkpoint? Because this is just terrifying of what's going on, because they scan her. She scans as false, so she can't go through. And he's just like, scan her again, scan her again, scan her again. So they do, and it's good. It's pass. And they let her through. It's like, what? Like, what? So they're either just letting people through who shouldn't be, or they're throwing people away who shouldn't be. You know, it's like, what is the trust in this scanner? They just did it back to back on the same person, got two different results, but this is what they're going with. They're just going with whatever result was here. That is like terrifying.
Yeah. And the only reason they scanned again is because he has like clearance and he's like, just do it. I'm giving you an order.
Yeah.
And like right before that, we saw them scan another woman and the scan failed.
Yeah.
And she's got like blood coming out of her eye.
Yeah.
So it's like, if the scan fails, that's not a good thing.
No, bad.
Yeah. So Will puts his wife, daughter, and Sam, who's a puppy, on a helicopter. They say a quick prayer. The daughter gives Sam back to Will. The helicopter takes off and is immediately destroyed in an accident with another helicopter.
Damn.
So that's the flashback we get. It's obviously done not to give us information about the virus. It's done to give us a connection to his family.
Yeah, for sure.
What'd you think of the flashbacks?
Oh, it's so like I remember the flashbacks, like, so they show us them in three pieces, like you said. So we actually don't get the crash until the last one, but they set us up with the crash before that, where he just like gets his family onto the helicopter. And that's when I remembered. I was like, oh no, this helicopter is going to crash. Like, it's going to happen right in front of him. Like, you make this assumption that if he's alone, like maybe the disease took them, you know, maybe some of these like creatures that are out there took them, like it was something else took them. And then you just see that it's like, it's so stupid. It's just a helicopter crash that happened in front of his face because he was just trying to get them out. Like, he's just trying to save them and get them out, and a helicopter crash. So even though he had this like you know, this extra clearance to be able to get them out, that didn't help. They still died in that helicopter. And yeah, it's very devastating. I think it's like everything in this movie, it doesn't take a very long time to give us those emotions. You know, it is just like efficient. It gets to them right away. And I feel the pain, even though this is like pretty quick. You know, if you put all the scenes together, the runtime of all this flashback is probably not that long. It's probably under 10 minutes, but it just like, I feel it right away.
It's probably 5 minutes. Yeah.
It's probably 5 minutes. Yeah.
The juxtaposition with these flashbacks against what's actually happening in the movie to Will Smith, it's all done very, very well.
Yeah.
You know, and like you said, you don't learn till very later on that his family died, and it hits really hard, man. It hits really hard. I remember the first time seeing it, I was blown away. I never in 100 years would have thought that he gets them on that chopper. They're on it for 10 seconds and they blow up.
Yeah.
So a great moment in the movie, having them already set up his relationship with Sam, the dog. We didn't see the family die in the helicopter, but we already saw Sam the dog as a puppy, with the daughter. So we know that Sam has kind of like grown up with him. I will just say as a side note that his daughter in the movie was actually Willow Smith, his daughter in real life. So I thought that was kind of neat.
Cool.
But they've built up how important Sam is to him. Like you mentioned already, he's talking to Sam. We see him giving Sam a bath. You know, he's definitely treating Sam like a pet, but even beyond that, like he's treating it like it's the only person he has that he can talk to, that he feels like can respond to him.
Yeah. So yeah, just like the whole like eat your vegetables, and then like Sam didn't eat the vegetables, so tomorrow you're eating double vegetables. You know, just like trying to treat Sam as close to a person as possible.
We'll sit here all night until you finish those vegetables.
Until you finish those vegetables.
Yeah. So great thing for the movie to do here is they put the dog in danger. They're out hunting one day, the two of them. Sam chases a deer just like he's supposed to, but actually I think Sam's a guy. It could be a girl, though.
No, it's Samantha. It's a girl.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Samantha, right.
Yeah.
So Sam chases a deer into a dark building where she's not supposed to go. She's supposed to know better because in the dark buildings during the day are where the infected go because sunlight kills them. Will has to go inside the building after Sam. Sam is all he has. Nothing matters. Nothing's going to stop him from like saving his dog. And this scene of him going into this pitch black building is one of those scenes in a movie that is so intense, I will never forget watching it the first time. It's just, it is, it's edge of your seat stuff to like the highest degree. It's so intense. What did you like about this?
Oh man, yeah, this scene completely rules. So I love how scared he is in the scene. You can really tell, like, he's the one that we're kind of mirroring our emotions to while we're watching, and he is terrified to be in this building. And he's been scared about things before, but this is like the next level. And what I love about this scene, it's such a good choice. So he's got a gun with like a flashlight on it, and so he goes around covering up the light so that, like, because he doesn't want to shine too much light. He doesn't want to be seen in the darkness. It's so dark in here. It's completely dark, but he wants to be able to see. So if ever he hears that someone's close, he covers it up, and then he just does like little releases so that he can like see a bit and then cover it up quickly, and then see a bit and cover it up quickly. And there's like nothing scarier than just like complete darkness and then just a quick flashlight and a quick cover up. Like, oh, what did you see in that moment? Like, you try to see, you try to think that you, what was that? What did I actually see? You try to put it together before you can even see it all. You know, you're trying to put it together before the darkness comes back. I just thought that that choice made the scene so intense. And every time that he was going to let the light out, I was afraid of what I was going to see.
Yeah, definitely. Good point about his fear. He's so scared.
So scared.
He's got a machine gun, but he's so afraid.
Yeah.
Yeah. He comes across some of the infected sleeping, and we get to see them for the first time. There's like 8 or 10 of them standing up in a circle, like hyperventilating. And he sees that and has to like continue on, like deeper into the building.
Yeah. Yeah.
He finds Sam, but the infected wake up and like they're able to kind of get to him. One of them jumps on his back. They move so fucking fast. It's terrifying.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he has to jump out of a window to escape. The one on his back starts to melt once they hit the sunlight and nobody else comes out because of the sun. So that's where we learned the sun is bad. And I like where they go from here because I'm so terrified. I'm like, wow, that was a near miss. That was like, let's go home. Let's have a, you know, let's have a hot bath. Let's have a glass of whiskey. Let's watch one of those movies from the video store. But they don't do that. He immediately goes back to that building and sets up a trap to catch one of them. And I was not expecting this.
Nope. He puts Sam in the car, says, you know, you stay here. It's too dangerous for you. And goes back out. And yeah, it is. Was not expecting him to do that. Also love the like jump out the window. Was not expecting him to be up higher than the first floor. Like we saw it happen, but I didn't keep track. It's so dark. I didn't keep track of it. Flies out the window. So intense. Goes to the car, puts the dog in the car, and then comes back. Like after that, he was so scared. Yeah, I just, this is so shocking.
Yeah, so he sets up his trap and he captures one of the infected, and they call them Dark Seekers. That's what the what they're calling them in the movie. So Will has this Dark Seeker and he can run tests on it now. You know, he's looking for a cure. We've seen him trying his cure in mice. And he thinks he found one that might work. He's sort of like calmed the anger of one of the mice. So he's ready to test it on a subject, which is why he wanted this infected. Problem here is the girl he caught is the leader of this infected group's. It's the girlfriend of him. And he's very upset that his girlfriend has been taken from him.
Right.
And now this was a neat scene too, because that the leader, once he realizes she's been taken, he runs out of the building into the sunlight and is standing there and is getting fried a little bit before going back into the building. Will later, when he's documenting it, he says he thinks that the infected are further de-evolving because of what he just saw. He's like, now they're so out of it that they're running into the sunlight without really even knowing it. But in reality, it was the complete opposite. Like that infected ran out because like he still has a capacity to love. And that's what he was doing. So I thought it was interesting that, like, as, you know, this doctor who's left in New York trying to find a cure for the virus, he's completely off on, like, how he's reading this situation.
Yeah, it's showing you his complete focus on survival, which I think is also plays into why he let the family of lions go at the beginning. Like, he's all about what can survive and survival. And they are hanging out in groups. They still wear clothes. And then this one runs out because one of them was taken from him. Like, these are all things that are showing that they still have humanity with them. And he just, like, doesn't see that. He just sees, there was harm that this one caused to himself. So he's, you know, he's gone. All humanity's gone. The survival's gone.
Yeah. So, being very pissed off at the situation, the infected basically set up the exact same trap that Will did, and they catch him.
It fucking rules.
This was so great.
It's so good.
Another extremely intense scene.
Yeah.
Dude, anytime you're on the clock, and the clock is that the sun is going down, it's so fucking intense. And that's what's going on here. Like, the infected, they used one of his mannequins as bait. And this was interesting because it sort of broke Will's mind when he saw the mannequin that he's expecting to see at the movie store is now at a different building. He sort of cracked a bit, and I get it. That would be really weird. I'd crack as well. Like, how did you move? First of all, how did you move, mannequin? But then your brain might go to who moved you and why? And it's all just very scary, you know, to think about.
Yeah. His brain was stuck on how did you move? Like, he was yelling at Fred. I believe the mannequin's name's Fred. He was yelling at Fred to tell him if he was real. Like, he's like, if you're real, Fred, you better tell me now because I'm going to shoot. And it's like, he was just so broken. He's like, he knows that that just shows you, you know, he knows the mannequins aren't real. He's just talking to them to, like, keep his own sanity.
Yeah.
And so when it moved, that's what really messed him up. And really, he was, like, short-circuiting. He was having a panic attack for sure, which, of course, would happen. You expect that mannequin to never move.
Yeah. So, you know, he approaches, or first he guns it down with the machine gun and then approaches, steps in a puddle, a trap goes off, grabs him by the foot, pulls him upside down. He hits his head and he's unconscious. And he's probably hanging upside down, who knows, 2 hours, 4 hours, 6 hours.
Yeah.
But he comes to and his watch is just beeping. It's violently beeping, which is a bad sign because we know it's too late.
We know what that means.
He's supposed to be home by now.
Yeah.
You know, it's very dark. The sun's going down. And really great as he has to cut himself down. But he lands on his knife when he cuts himself down. So now his leg's all stabbed up. And he's got mere seconds to get into his car before these three infected dogs, you know, come at him.
Yeah.
And he's able to kill the dogs, but not before Sam is in a fight with one of them and gets bitten.
Yeah.
So before we move on, anything you wanted to say about that scene where he gets captured?
No, just love that it's the exact same trap and like the way it's slowly kind of revealed to us. You know, he used a car in order to be the counterweight to when he set his trap to catch the Darkseeker, and then he just steps on something, you hear something, and then the taxi behind him just starts to slowly go over the side, and you're like, oh my goodness, like that. This Dark Seeker learned exactly what you did, set it up for you, put your mannequin Fred there. It's just, it's great. I love that this is where the movie went, that they're still kind of smart. Actually, they're really smart.
Very smart.
Like, he set up this trap to catch him, and then he didn't even go out after him. He sent dogs out after him because he's also very smart, knowing that he could have a gun, like Will Smith could have a gun to shoot him. So he's like, I'll send the dogs out after him. Yeah, it just shows you how smart they are. And then they become more terrifying because of that.
Yeah. So this all leads to an extremely sad moment in the movie as Will takes Sam home. He's trying to help her, but she starts turning in his arms. She's turning infected. And once she turns, he's forced to choke her to death. Dude, this chokes me up every time I watch the movie. Doesn't matter. It's absolutely heartbreaking. It's gut-wrenching. We know how much this dog means to him. It's his last connection to his family. It's the last, like, you know, quote unquote person that he has available to him to, like, be with him in this journey, and he has to kill her.
Yeah.
It's fucked, man. It's like, it's a great movie moment, but it's just, it's very, very hard.
It's absolutely devastating. Yeah. You like, you feel it so much. Will Smith is doing, like, the scene is just on his face while he's doing it, and yeah, he's just looking off, and you can just see his eyes, like, filling with tears. It's, yep, just the struggle happening. It's awful.
Yeah, it's like, it's these types of moments in the movie that really do it for me, where I'm calling this my favorite from him.
Yeah,
he doesn't have have a lot to go off of. He's not bouncing scenes off of other people. It's just him understanding, like, the situation and understanding how to behave. And he's doing such a good job with it, man.
Yeah, it's a good call.
So with Sam gone, now we get to watch how Will's going to deal with loss, you know, the loss of this companion. And he does not take it well.
No.
He's overcome with sadness. He has a conversation with a mannequin at the video store. And then he goes on a suicidal rampage against the infected in the middle of the night. What did you think about this? This attack on the infected on their turf at their time.
Yeah. Yeah. First, I'll say the video store. So the video store, he goes to talk to this lady mannequin that he's never talked to before. But he promised Sam that he'd talk to her. So he went and talked to her, but she didn't answer. So I think this just shows you, like, his hope that he's keeping up with talking to them, with going to the video store, keeping up conversations with all the mannequins. That's his hope. That's what keeps him going. And in this moment, he can't do it. He can't hear the other voice. He can't have the conversation with the other mannequin. So I think that's him sort of giving up in that moment. You know, he can't do it anymore. His brain can't get himself to that point, you know, to keep pushing.
Yeah.
And so he can't imagine it anymore. So, yeah, then he goes on this suicide rampage, basically, like getting all of a bunch of dark seekers to kind of fall into a trap to kind of, you know, chase after where they might think he is. And then he's just running them over in his truck. I think so many times this truck is going to, like, fly off the side into the water or crash into something too hard that it rolls. And it like goes back and forth, not doing that until, you know, it finally does. But yeah, it's a very intense scene for basically just driving around, hitting these dark seekers. Yeah, it keeps me on the edge of my seat for sure.
Yeah, I found it really intense because of how violent they show us the dark seekers are.
Yeah.
They basically use their bodies as weapons. They have no regard for pain. Like they're really running at full speed and just smashing into his car. They're smashing into the windshield. They're smashing into the doors. At one point, I think it's the leader. He, like, the car has stopped. He's going as fast as he can, and he, like, just missiles himself into the side of the car. It's a big SUV, and he rolls it over with the force of how hard he's going, which a human could not do that. That there is something like far more powerful about these things. And it's just, it's so destructive. It was quite scary, actually, just seeing them do that. So, but Will's about to be killed when a bright light is turned on, and that scares off the infected. And Will is pulled out of the car by Anna and her young son, Ethan, who have heard this message that he sends every day, and they've come for help. He says, I'll be here, you know, at 12 o'clock every day. I have food. I have protection. I can help you. And he's been doing that for probably 3 years. And on the one day he doesn't show up, you know,
because
his dog died and he's grieving, they showed up and they were just waiting there. You know, they're like, where were you? We've been here since noon and now it's like midnight.
Yeah. Jeez.
But Anna, like, takes Will home. He's out. He's like, he's been busted up really, really good. He's like half unconscious, but he's able to, like, as they're in the car, he's able to mumble to her to drive around until the sun comes up. So the infected can't track them back to his house.
Yeah.
But she doesn't do that. And the next night they come for him.
Yeah.
This is pretty wild scene here. They get into the house. the leaders beating the shit out of Will. He's able to get a machine gun and fight it off. And then they escape to the lab in the basement as dozens more flood the house. So
yeah,
this house has been like this sanctuary. It's felt protected this whole time. It's got gigantic metal doors with locks, you know, it seems so well protected. And to see it overrun in this moment, this was a little bit like, this is painful for me. You know, this,
yeah,
the house, I don't know, the house felt like a bit of a character, like the protector for him. And without it, you're just thinking, well, what's he going to do? He's dead, right? Without the house and them not knowing where he is, he's a goner. So interesting moment. Yeah. What do you think?
Yeah. The setup for this is a little misleading, I think, because the way we see him set up his house the first time when it's going to be nighttime, he's closing all the big doors. He's closing all these doors over windows. And you're like, ah, the fortress, nothing will penetrate this fortress. This is great. He's so safe here. But it's not just that. Like, those things are also just keeping it quiet. You know, it's just like so that they don't really notice he's there. But if they know he's there, he immediately panics. Just knowing that they are coming, he's not just like, oh, we're safe here because I have this fortress. No, it's a problem right away. And just that they know where he is, they can just break in. They're just ripping through the walls and ripping through the ceiling. Like, it's no problem for them to get in. And yeah, so it's like, it's this flip on us who we felt very safe at home. We get home, we're good. You know, you're safe in your house. Not the case. You're only safe if they don't know where you are. So yeah, this was very scary. Like, yeah, I thought this would be like, okay, you know, bunker down. Let's get the gun out. Let's start picking them off. We'll be fine. No, this is a problem.
Yeah, he had like one ditch effort where as dozens of them were running up to his property, he had like a bunch of bombs set up and he blew the shit out of everything and probably killed 50 of them. But then they just bring another wave and there's nothing he can do. So,
yeah.
So that kind of gets us, you know, to the end sequence here where he's down in the lab with Anna and the boy, Ethan. And they notice at that moment that this infected girl that Will trapped and is running tests on is finally responding to the treatment that he's giving her. So he's sort of bringing her back. But, you know, the boyfriend and the other infected are down in the lab as well. They're on the other side of this like glass door. They're breaking through it. You know, it's only a matter of time before they get through. Will's screaming at them that he can save them, but they're not hearing what he's saying. Will takes some of the infected girl's blood, gives it to Anna, and locks her and Ethan in a safe and tells them to stay there until dawn. Then Will grabs a grenade out of the drawer as the infected are breaking through the glass. He runs into them. Him and the boyfriend kind of like collide and they're all blown up. Then we see Anna and Ethan, like however many days later, arriving at a safe point. It's something that she's been talking about, and she hands over the cure to the people and the end.
Yeah. So you have different sections of like of people in this movie, and there's like all the people who died because of whatever the virus outbreak, all the people that just immediately died. Then there's the people that actually turned into these monsters, and then there's the people that are immune. And the people that are immune can't get the virus, but the monsters are kind of picking them off. So this is supposed to be a sanctuary of all the immunes, and the cure is supposed to be to actually cure those monsters back into people, you know, to back into like making this society. So yeah, they found this safe haven that's all the immune people. And like when the gates open, it's really great because like they open and you see this little community, you know, there's like dogs running around on the street, there's families, there's houses, there's like a church there or something. It's like they have something here. They're actually, they're building something. They've got walls around it. So you're like, okay, there's like hope here. You can live here. And then if this is the cure, maybe, you know, maybe you can start making it a safer world. So this is really hopeful ending. And I just really liked how it was hopeful by just us seeing it. You know, we're just kind of watching what happened and it seemed very hopeful.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good ending. I mean, I really liked Will grabbing the grenade and sort of like sacrificing himself in that moment.
Yeah.
Really powerful. You know, I think if he still has Sam, he doesn't make that play. He doesn't do
Maybe
it.
Not, yeah.
He, you know, he's got Sam to be responsible for, but he had nothing left. And as soon as Sam was gone and he made that play, that suicide play to go head on with the infected, he's given up. And, you know, even with Anna and Ethan, you know, they do spend some time with the scenes at Will's house with them. And you can really tell that Will has given up. They're sort of positive about this, this safe place they can get to. He's adamant everyone's dead. He's very negative about everything. I really think that the moment that Sam gets killed, the last sort of like string to his past life, that's it for him. There's no coming back. And I like the way that he goes out. It's a sad moment, you know, that he does it. But it really hit me hard. It was, I thought it was a fantastic ending.
Yeah, totally. Cause you see that importance with Sam, because like Sam was on the helicopter with the wife and daughter, but then, you know, the daughter gave Sam to Will so that he could have, you know, something, and that, you know, she'll protect him. And then like, that's his last connection to the family. So yeah, when that is gone, his best friend, you know, gone, it makes sense that he would make this choice. So it makes sense that the movie, you know, kills the dog, because that's the only way he can get to this point, I think.
Yeah. Now, did you see the alternate ending?
I've seen it before. I didn't watch it this time around, so I've seen it like 10 years ago. I don't really remember what happened.
Okay, so I'm going to bring it up only because there's been a sequel to this movie that's been officially announced.
Yeah.
It's in development right now, and it's actually going to follow the alternate ending rather than this ending, because...
Weird, but okay, yeah.
Well, in the alternate ending, Will doesn't die, and he's going to be in the next movie.
He's going to be in it. Okay, yeah.
So, just for anybody who hasn't seen it, the alternate ending, they go down into the lab, kind of as is normal in the movie. The infected are down there, but instead of, like... meeting them head on with a grenade, he opens the door and lets the infected come in. And instead of fighting him and him fighting them, they just want the girl back. And he kind of like, he gives her back. It's interesting because he actually like puts a needle in her to reverse the antidote. So she's getting better, but he has to like almost like reinfect her because they want her the way she was.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah.
So he kind of like gets his medicine out of her. She turns sort of like back into the wild infected. Before they leave with her, they look on the wall and there's all these photographs, probably 50 photographs of infected that Will has run tests on and that have all died. Now, that is something we saw in the movie. But I think here they sort of focus on it because the infected leader looks at the wall and then like lets out a roar at Will. Just like, you're running tests on us. You've killed all of these like probably friends of mine. Like you're the monster.
Right.
And basically in a show of compassion, once they get the girl, they just leave. And then Will is alive. They probably still have their antidote. Anna and Ethan are still alive. So I don't like that as much because I really feel like the place we got with Will was for him to kind of like do what he did at the end with the grenade. I think that's a great ending, but I guess if you want your sequel and you want Will Smith involved, sure, go the alternate ending route.
Yeah, because I knew there was a sequel and I saw that he was involved, so I didn't know if he was just going to be in flashback scenes or something. So yeah, I guess that makes sense that they're going with the alternate ending. I remember watching it back in the day and just not really liking it as much. I like the ending we get, for sure. I think they made the right choice.
Yeah, and you know what? Flashbacks of Will probably would have been the way to do it, in my opinion. Keep him dead.
Yeah.
You can always bring someone back in flashbacks. You know, tell a bit of a different story that way. It's totally fine, so...
Yeah.
I'll watch the movie. I don't have very high expectations for it, but who knows? Maybe they'll surprise me.
Yep. I don't know if it's Francis Lawrence also again. I mean, it would make sense if it was, but I'm not sure if it is.
I'm not sure if they even have a director yet.
Okay, that's what I thought. I wasn't sure if they actually had anyone assigned to the project yet. Okay.
And who knows, man? Who knows if it'll even go down? I know. I heard that this one was in production hell for 12 years.
Okay.
So 1995 is when they said, we're going to do I Am Legend. And then 2007, it finally comes out. So who knows?
Wow.
Cool. All right. Well, hey, everybody listening, thanks for tuning in. If you'd like to support us, check us out on Patreon. We've got some, well, not some, we've got a ton of bonus episodes over there. A whole bunch of James Bond movies. We're walking through that franchise. We've got us playing video games over there, a handful of other movies, all sorts of monthly wrap-ups where we go off the rails. Check us out on YouTube. We have a channel called Demo Dash where we play demos from the Nintendo store and we try to beat them in 20 minutes. We try to learn what the hell we're doing. Oftentimes in 20 minutes, we can't even figure out the controls or what the fuck's going on. But it's a ton of fun over there. Check that out. And hey, now that this episode's over, head on over to BFOPnetwork.com. Check out one of the other amazing nostalgia-based podcasts in our network. You'll probably find something over there better than us. We're willing to bet on it.
Yeah, for sure. Are you kidding me?
Go there. You'll never come back to talking back. There's to be no reason to. Just make sure to tell your friend about us so that your friend will listen to us before they move on to BFOPnetwork.com.
We might be the only one who covered I Am Legend. So this is your sole I Am Legend episode, everybody.
True. Lots of crossover with some of the other podcasts, but I don't think anyone's covered this movie. That's a great point, Dean.
I don't think so.
Right on. Well, Dean, thank you for joining.
Thanks, Tim.
Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Hello, everybody. I'm Adam.
I'm John.
And every week, we are giving you a blast from our past.
We are the podcast that brings you full-on movie breakdowns, TV show reviews, album reviews, top tens, and more, all from the things of our nostalgic past.
So please join us every single week on the Blast From Our Past podcast. You can find us on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts. However you listen to podcasts, you can find us, and we would love to have you take a trip with us to the land of nostalgia.